Sands, one more boom before I die.
Those discussions are ongoing. They have been constructive. There is a prospect of an agreement. It's not finalized. So, in my experience in these things, is when things aren't final, it's better not to overly speculate on where they're going from there.
Prairie towns and derrick grounds, old field camps and old field.
Well, although Mark Carney won't confirm, it sounds as if a deal has been struck. Rumors are Thursday is the day that Prime Minister Mark Carney and Alberta Premier Danielle Smith will basically do the handshake, come together for a memorandum of understanding that would give Alberta special exemptions from federal environmental laws and offer some political support to a new oil pipeline to the BC coast. That was information that's been swirling around here in the last 24 hours. So it's sounding like Thursday we hear about an actual pipeline deal. We'll obviously be keeping our ear to the ground on that. In fact, we'll talk a little bit more about that coming up this hour. There is so much going on right now to talk about. I know people want to talk about Mark Carney saying, "Who cares?" to the media question about when was the last time you talked with Donald Trump. Big mistake. We'll talk about that coming up. I also want to talk a bit about rent controls. This has been in the news in the last little while. In fact, the Saskatchewan NDP brought up a motion yesterday that will be voted on today. It sounds as if it's not going to pass. The SAS party government not supporting the notion of rent controls. I want to talk about that with you as well. But I'm going to start with budget and budget discussions, because Saskatoon actually at the budget table today at City Hall, and Regina will be here in the next little while. It's got a lot of people up in arms about some of the numbers that they feel are too big in terms of tax increases. I got this text from Dale yesterday, and I'm going to read parts of it. It's a very long text, but Dale basically disturbed about the unwillingness of our elected officials to scrutinize fire and protective service levels as area cuts and expenditures in the municipal budget. So one of his points is, and I'll read from his text, Dale says, "Perhaps my biggest question is, why does Saskatoon and Regina continue to fund fire medical responses? The responsibility to fund and deliver paramedic services is legislated responsibility of the Saskatchewan Health Authority and not the cities. If the municipalities believe the SHA is under-delivering on EMS service, then city council roles should be to lobby the SHA and the provincial government to fund EMS appropriately." So this is the notion that now well over 100 firefighters in both Saskatoon and Regina also have paramedic designation. They are all, in fact, I think it's mostly new hires over the last number of years, also have to have training as a primary care paramedic, which means they will also offer response to emergency health-related calls, because often fire can increase the response time to those potentially life-saving calls. So Dale's point is, why are we doing the job of the provincial governments? SHA should make sure that they've got enough paramedics out there to respond to this. And then Dale also goes on to talk about a fire hall. He's basically laying out each fire hall has a commercial style kitchen and sleeping quarters. Are taxpayers being unrealistic if firefighters had to pack their own lunch like the rest of the working world? Regina and Saskatoon firefighters recently moved to 12-hour shifts, which means many firefighters are sleeping for half of their paid hours that taxpayers are paying for. I've summarized Dale's text because it's a long one, but when we are talking about high budget increases, high tax increases for you and I, it's something that has people talking. 1-877-332-8255. Conspiracy Kevin, here to talk about budget increases and tax increases. What's on your mind today, Kev?
Okay, I'd like to read you a couple of things here. Extortion is the practice of obtaining benefit from an individual or group through coercion, usually by threatening them with future psychological and physical harm. In Canada, it constitutes a criminal crime. Another one, the practice, extortion, Oxford Dictionaries, the practice of obtaining something, especially money, through force or threats. Your own radio station used the word threaten to the conservatory with its end. And then just section C-46 of the Justice Canada, every person who commits extortion is guilty of an indictable offense and liable. when did it become okay for our politicians, who are supposed to be representing us, to use terrorism, fear, and bullying to extort us? I mean, the Conservatory is just... it spoke volumes to me this morning when I heard the number $73,000. Are you kidding me? Are you telling me that they can't find $73,000 in excessive wages in upper and middle management? Redundant positions in upper and middle management? They can't find $73,000 in unwarranted bonuses? Give me a break. You know, Ari said the other day, this is a call to action, and it is time. It is a call to action. It's time we demand a forensic audit of all city for the last 20 years and find out where this money's going. And I don't mean a forensic audit by the big three who make their margins and their profits from governments. I'm talking by private individuals who are qualified to do it, and we go right through it completely. You know, your intrepid reporters could easily go in there and find all kinds of waste of money at City Hall. And this idea of using, and that's exactly what it is, your own radio station use it, they're threatening us. That's a crime.
There's a wake-up call on a Tuesday morning, Kevin. Thanks for calling. You got my attention with the extortion thing, and I know where you're going, because... you know, the theory that, if I'm just going to extrapolate what Kevin's talking about, the theory is that cities are saying to residents, okay, here's the possibilities. If we cut the budget, if we don't make the budget increase what we are forecasting it to be, here are the possible consequences. Now, it probably doesn't meet the threshold of extortion. But Kevin, you know, he likes to bring those things up just to maybe make a point. And he's right. The Conservatory, I mean, we heard it from Councillor David Froh this past week on our station saying, we're not going to cut the Conservatory. We saw this with lawn bowling. We saw it with potted plants on boulevards. This has happened year in and year out where the forecast comes out, the potential tax increase is high. And then a bevy of things are laid out as these are potential things we would have to cut if we were going to make some tough decisions. Kevin, thanks. Thanks for the call. Thanks for getting us going this morning. 1-877-332-8255. Happy to talk about the tax situation. Here's the other thing that has been in the news here in the last little while, and I want to talk about this because I know we've got a caller on it, is the notion of rent controls. So Saskatchewan's NDP yesterday introduced a bill to make life, this is in their release, to make life more affordable and get Saskatchewan's worst in the country rent hikes under control. Now, our rent hikes, I've seen some stats that show in the last little while, the rent hikes in Saskatchewan have been some of the largest in the country. The flip side of that, though, is that our rents are still among the lowest in the country. Saskatchewan's rate is quite low. In fact, it's, I think, half in some cases of what you've got in other provinces, in other parts of the country. So the question is, bringing in rent controls, and this is what the NDP's motion is, or piece of legislation is, it's going to be voted on today. Safe to say it's going to be voted down because the SAS party has said no. Bringing in rent controls, is it the way to go? Does it achieve essentially easier, better cost of living for those people who find themselves as renters in this province? And by the way, there's somewhat 320,000 renters estimated in the province of Saskatchewan. So it's a number, 320,000. Obviously, that's quite a few. I saw a report that said somewhere around 26% of the adult population finds themselves in a renting situation, 26%, which is lower than some parts of especially those large metropolitan areas. Here's the challenge for me on this. First of all, I've got two family members, one who's younger family member who's waiting and trying to save up some money to buy a house, who's renting and just found out that her rent, this is my daughter, her rent is going up $90 a month. On the flip side of it, my mother-in-law just moved into a senior's residence. She's lived in a home all of her life, like in a owned her own home, but just recently moved into a senior's residence and found out her rent was going up $200 a month. So those are both significant for sure, and have an impact. So I get that side of the argument that people that have either lower or limited income, or pensioners who are on a fixed income, people who maybe are unemployed, it can make things tight. I went on a deep dive last night on rent controls because I have to be honest, I didn't know a lot about it. It's been a long time since I've been a renter. A lot of the documentation that I found from economists, from provincial reports that have been done in Canada, and even reports from outside of Canada, say that rent controls actually have a negative impact on the market and on cost of living. Rent controls can, number one, cease new builds, which means the number of rental properties in a community don't grow to meet the demand in the community, and that tends to drive the price higher. Long story short, most of the reports that I read said that rental control will actually, in the long term, hurt your economy. In fact, there's one that I was reading here. The quote from The Economist said, "In many cases, rent control appears to be the most efficient technique presently known to destroy a city, except for bombing." That was a Swedish economist who wrote that. And by the way, don't forget, we had rent control in Saskatchewan in 1992, and Roy Romano got rid of it. Roy Romano, the NDP government at that time, brought in legislation, the Residential Tenancies Act, to try and put stronger policy alternatives in place to regulate the industry as opposed to using rent control. So this is a tough one, and I understand why people are worried about the rising cost of rent. It has real implications on people, and there's a lot of seniors that fall into that. But the long-term effects, it would appear, show that rent control has the opposite effect in communities and on provinces. 1-877-332-8255. One quick call before we go to the break. Let's talk to Cal in Oxbow. You got a thought on rent control, Cal?
I'm not a fan of rent control. I firmly believe that it really hurts investment. I mean, my wife and I have a couple of rental properties, and if we're controlled on rent, why would we invest in more properties in order to sort of build our business? I just don't believe that rent controls are a positive way to move forward in terms of housing and everything else.
One of the other things that I read, Cal, last night when I was looking through this is a lot of kind of cause and effect of rent control is properties go basically unfixed. So there are more problems with rental properties. Landlords don't have the ability to do the repairs, do the fixing and the upkeep. And so the rental standards can go down over a period of time with rent control. Part of what I read in some of the writings last night as well.
Well, I would agree. If your income drops, then, you know, you slowly become a slumlord because you don't want to make repairs because you're not making that much of a profit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That part I agree with.
I also know you're wanting to talk about Mark Carney before the break. What's on your mind there, Cal?
Well, you know, this comment that he made, there's three other comments that he made earlier, and this is where I really believe Mark Carney is not in it for Canadians. Now, I'm waiting to see this deal that he says is coming. So you can call me and say, "I told you so, Cal." But I'm really curious to see what's in this deal with Alberta, because I don't believe that he's interested in pipelines. In that meeting that he had in Toronto, he said pipelines are boring. Then he was in a speech in Europe. He talked about the fires in Canada and climate change, which they won't get away from, even though we know a vast majority of those fires were arson.
Human caused.
Then he, in the UAE, which I'm going to get to a little bit if I can about Brookfield, he started to talk about our pension funds, which he doesn't have the right to start using as his own personal wealth fund that he can spread around. Okay, and then he also makes that comment about Trump, who cares, because he's not interested in making a deal with the United States, which, again, I've said before, is crazy. We do $761 billion worth of trade with the U.S. All other countries combined, we are less than $350 billion. Mm-hmm. So there's no way we can make that up, no matter what we do. So it's not in the best interest of Canadians to not have a deal with the U.S.
It's, I'll tell you, this is going to be a topic of conversation, obviously, that is going to, I think, permeate for a while. We need to take a break. I've got a lot of people on the phone lines, a lot of texts coming in. So, sorry, Cal, I'm going to have to jump in and say, let's take our break. When we come back, it can be city budgets and potential tax increases, rent controls, Mark Carney's thoughts on whether or not he needs to get down and talk to Donald Trump. There's a variety of things. Whatever's on your mind, open lines here for you. 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
Smoking cigarettes and watching Captain Kangaroo. Now don't tell me.
Yeah, well, we're not going to cut the floor conservatory. That's insanity. I think they get roughly $60,000 a month.
Counting flowers on the wall. That don't bother me
right.
at all.
You're a wizard with those clips. Thanks so much for joining us today. Evan Bray, great to have you here on Open Lines. Looking at a text here, Trevor in Regina says, well, first time ever in my life, I'm agreeing with Conspiracy Kevin. He said, I wanted to lash out the same way he was about some of these proposed tax increases in the city. Trev, thanks for the text. 1-877-332-8255. Wayne out of Saskatoon, what's got you riled up this morning, Wayne?
Well, Evan, the homeless situation, yes, sir, it is kind of sad to see, but when politicians use them as pawns to gain popularity among the people, that's not how it should be.
Do you think that's what's happening in Saskatoon?
Of course that's what's happening. Ever since Charlie Clark started, you know, before him, there wasn't all this talk about hitting us with more taxes and putting them in homes somewhere. A lot of them are homeless because of their own decisions. They're not homeless because they can't find somewhere to live. They're homeless because of their situation, and a lot of it may be, drug related, and a vast majority of them are mental illness.
I'm not disagreeing with you on those points, Wayne, but what I'll just throw out to you is, the number has definitely grown in the last number of years. So it's been in the last 5 or 6 years where we've seen this problem exponentially get bigger.
Well, I don't know. I mean, there is property just sort of north side of Saskatoon. It used to be a halfway house for kids. And that place just sits empty. The city actually bought that property. They could spend a few dollars to make that into a very good homeless place with a bus route if they chose to.
It's amazing how, and Wayne is a good example of this, how the discussions around homelessness in our communities and how we should be dealing with it, whose job is it to deal with it, where should the money come from, this is becoming a big part of budget discussions and no doubt will make up part of the discussions in Saskatoon this week as they sit down at City Council to make up the budget, make up, of course, what that will mean for taxpayers in the community as well. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Ian, don't go away. I got you on deck. Lots more to talk about. Lots more open lines here on 650 CKOM, 980 CJME.
Connor, can you please sign a magazine for me, man? You can personalize it, please. You can personalize it. There's only three of us. I've never gotten your autograph before. You can personalize it, please. What if I write to Joanna for you? I've never gotten you, dude. Please, just really quick, you can on it. I don't care. I got every single one of these magazines signed before. You're the only person I've never gotten. What can I do to say yes? It takes 2 seconds to sign. Can you just walk and sign it, please? Thank you, man. Appreciate you. Thank you, Connor.
Every move you make, every step you take,
yeah, the Green Zone was talking about that yesterday. The guy harping on Connor Bedard for an autograph. They were playing the back and forth. Is he a bad person for saying no? Absolutely not. I don't think he's a bad person at all. He's got places to go. He's busy schedule. Sometimes he probably just doesn't feel like it. You got to give him some slack. And in that case, definitely did not happen. So, okay, we have got conversations going in a couple of different directions this morning. I want to talk about Mark Carney's who cares comments, and we'll do that coming up. But Ian has been waiting patiently in Saskatoon, and we have been talking about Saskatoon City Council at the budget table today and over the next few days. That tax increase is looming somewhere around 7.5% right now. Ian, your thoughts on taxes, on this city budget, and what we can expect this week. Ian, have I got you there? Oh, I don't know. I think we lost. Oh, there I got you, Ian.
Sorry about that. Yeah. I had it on mute.
No problem.
I think it was the caller right before Kevin that was talking about an audit. Now, I'm sure every city has the same problems like Regina's crazy with their number.
It's double Saskatoon's number. Crazy.
I just happened to be looking outside one day, and I had called in to report a street light burnt out. And I look outside, and there was four city vehicles with six staff. Now, I realize it's unionized, and everybody has their job, you know. You can't pick up a shovel. That's my territory. I'll file a grievance. But there's one guy up in the bucket truck actually changing the bulb, another guy down who drove up in a little service vehicle in case he got to run for parts, and then another truck pulled up with two work guys in case they got to move some snow, and then there's a supervisor truck pulled up. So there's four vehicles and six or seven guys or whatever it was for one light bulb change. In small town Saskatchewan, it would be one guy doing it all. Mm-hmm. And they're probably all making $40,000. So there's $200,000 there to change one frickin' street light.
So you're saying there's room for efficiencies. That's where you're going?
Damn right.
Okay, Ian, thanks for the call. 1-877-332-8255. Are we calling this the Ari from Saskatoon tip of the day? Is that what we're going to start calling this, Ari?
For this week, sure, why not?
So yesterday, I'm just going to recap for the listeners who might have missed it. Ari called in and suggested, you know, there's a fairly big budget number attached to the Ramey Modern. Maybe we could reduce the number of hours from 10 in the morning till starting at noon, and that two-hour reduction a day could result in a cost saving that would save taxpayers money. Am I right?
That was it.
Okay,
so it was roughly a million.
Okay, so you've got a savings tip of the day today as we enter budget discussions. What is it?
Parking meter fines. Okay, the city is owed roughly $6 million in parking meter fines. And what they're thinking of doing right now is increasing the fines that they're not collecting anyways to get revenue. Now, I don't know about you, Evan. If somebody owes me money, I go after it. Mm-hmm. I get it from them. And I know the city's reluctant to call the province and say, hey, can we put it on license plates? So here's a really easy solution. They have an Excel spreadsheet that they can send out to every tow truck driver in the city once every 3 months. It's a catch and release. If you see this guy who's on the boot list, because they have a boot list, if the city finds them, they get booted till they pay their fine. If the tow truck driver finds them, they get towed, dropped in the city yard, and the car is either released when they pay the fines or the city sells the car to get the money back. This is not rocket science. But there's got to be, if it's $6 million outstanding, I'm sure we can get $2 million of that back.
There's a number of texts that I saw on the text line, Ari, talking exactly to your point. Why raise the fines if we don't have a mechanism to allow us to collect them in the first place, essentially, is what I saw on the text line. A number of people texting that in, and that is a substantial number. I didn't realize it was as high as $6 million, as Ari just said. But if you want to talk about, there's only a finite number of ways that cities can collect revenue, right? Tax is obviously a big one. Fees, so if you're using a leisure center or something and you're paying a fee to go in is one. But those fees generally just get absorbed back into the facility to help pay maintenance costs. But fines is one. Yet if the city isn't going to take advantage of it, and this isn't just for the city of Saskatoon, I would say this is much broader than that. There needs to be some teeth in the legislation to allow you to actually collect those fines. And that is part of the revenue that the city would be taking in. 1-877-332-8255. We'll stay on this topic. Another caller before I switch over to the Mark Carney talk here. But I want to grab the call from Wes, who's on the road. We're talking municipal budgets. Your thoughts today, Wes?
Good morning, Evan. How are you?
Good. I'm glad to have you calling into the show. Saskatoon budget is being discussed right now. Have you got some thoughts that could help them?
Well, I live in Regina, but we're facing the same thing, as you know, and two points that I have. One, I usually do an eye roll when Kevin calls in, but in this case, I do agree with him, you know, about kind of holding us hostage, if you will, to the numbers and to the threats. The other factor, though, is a caller that you just said about, you know, 12 people to change a light bulb. I had a similar situation. We had a water line break on Art Crescent. It took them three tries to fix the water break on three different days. There was four pieces of equipment, 12 guys, and four trucks for 8 hours a day before they finally got it right. So this is actually something that they need to look at inside of their own budgets, their own people, on efficiency and actual accountability as to where their money is being spent inside. Mm-hmm. If they look inside of their own city administration and city employee budget, they would make up for the shortfall threefold over what they are trying to ask.
See, it's interesting. When I hear you explain that, I mean, I have no idea what number of city crews would be needed for a water main break. We actually had one on our street, Wes. I think it's a common problem in Regina, if I'm being honest, but I remember a few years back, we had one on our street, and it was the same thing. There were a number of vehicles there, city vehicles, and it didn't last just one day. It lasted multiple. I don't know what the correct number is, but I think the theme we're hearing is, are we being as efficient as we could be? You know, Wes is suggesting maybe we need to start looking inside our organizations, not outside our organizations, in terms of cuts or savings. I remember we had people that ran for council in all communities in this province on the notion of an efficiency review. We need to do a thing to make sure that we're spending our money as efficiently and as effectively as possible. We've got a lot of new councillors on both budgets in Saskatoon and Regina, so it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out for sure. 1-877-332-8255. I can't stop this conversation. There's too many people calling in. I was going to go to Mark Carney. Maybe I'll slip that in after the break here, but I want to take Greg next, who's on the road. Greg, on the topic of budgets in our municipalities, what are you saying?
Well, you know, I'm really curious about these e-scooters that we see, because I see a lot of them ditched in places that, you know, like in bushes.
Yeah, I was going to say, we had one in our hedge one day, Greg.
Yeah, or in the river. And, you know, like, these things cost money to make. They cost money to repair and maintain. And, you know, I can't see that we're making the revenue from them to support their own costs.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Greg. I'm as you're talking about this, like, I think they work with a company. Right? Like, the city is not manufacturing and producing these scooters. They work with a company to produce them. Am I right?
I know nothing about that.
Yeah.
I thought it was all on the city.
Well, I mean, I think the city has opened up the possibility of scooters, but my knowledge on the topic is that they're working with a company, and they have the company bids on the contract. So there is revenue to the city, but in terms of the upkeep of the scooters and those types of things, I could be wrong, but I think that it's borne actually by the company and not the city. 1-877-332-8255. Let's grab another quick call before our break. Jeff, just south of Dundurn today, calling in. Thanks for the call, Jeff. What's on your mind?
Hey, good morning. I just tuned into your show and heard you talking about the budget. And I got to say, I'm going to be retiring in the next couple of years, and we're leaving Saskatoon.
Driven out by taxes, or what's causing you to leave the city?
The taxes on my house are over $6,000 per year, and they're going up. 8% of $6,000 is a lot of money.
Yeah.
I can't afford to live here anymore.
You're not the first person I've heard say that, Jeff, and that's the sad reality of increased taxes as well. We've had guests on the program off and on over the last week or two that have been saying the same thing, and maybe some of these communities, you're talking about, you know, a small community outside of Saskatoon, they're the ones that are going to benefit potentially, correct?
Oh, for sure. And, I mean, we're even thinking, you know, somewhere in the interior of BC.
Oh, leaving the province altogether. Don't leave us, Jeff. Don't leave us. We just won a Grey Cup.
I still be wearing green.
Thanks for calling in. 1-877-332-8255. Okay, last call before the break for sure. Perry from Osler. You do have something you'd like to add to this budget discussion, Perry. What is it?
Yeah, well, we always must remember that half of this money always ends up down in Ottawa in the way of taxes. The lion's portion of the tax, income tax and everything ends up down in Ottawa. So it's a vicious circle. The more they take from us, then everybody wants a wage increase. But still, the majority of that wage increase ends up down in Ottawa. So I guess if the cities want to complain about it, maybe they should start to think about not voting NDP and Liberals in, because that's the ones that drove the cost of everything up and put us in the situation to begin with.
1-877-332-8255. We'll take a break. We'll be right back on 650 CKOM, 980 CJME.
Being motivated to do something special here. Nobody's ever won two in a row here. You know what I mean? So I know this group. That would bring excitement to the guys to come together and try to do something that's not been done here before.
Coach Corey Mace is not going to Toronto. Yeah, they knocked on his door. We heard about that on the Green Zone yesterday. But Coach Mace, he's got unfinished business here. He said it on our program. He said it to Saskatchewan people many times, and we look forward to next season already under Coach Mace. Okay, I wanted to talk about Mark Carney and his "Who Cares" comment. I'm going to play the short clip here in just a minute. Over the years, especially the years that I worked as chief of police in Regina, I was in front of the media and did media scrums, in some cases, four times a week, depending on the number of topics. I could count on one hand the number of times where I feel like I got myself in hot water. Every single one of them was when I answered out of frustration or emotion. So I'm not saying I'm perfect, because I definitely did it. And there were a few times where I'm sure my comms people were like, "Oh my gosh, Chief, like really? You had to say that?" So I get it that it happens, but it's not good. And I feel like Mark Carney this week showed a side of him that we haven't seen a lot of, especially in the media. He was frustrated with some of the questions he was getting asked. In fact, there's two questions on this short clip I'm going to play. The first one, if you saw the video, he rolls his eyes at the question and then gives a short answer. The second one, he starts with "Who cares?" And then the fallout comes from that.
Since the U.S. called off trade talks with Canada, has Mr. Trump returned your calls, texts, or accepted your apology over the Ontario ad?
He accepted the apology when I spoke to him. And we've had discussions. I've been busy. We passed a budget that's going to catalyze $1 trillion of investment. We have launched new trade agreements. We've secured new investment. So we're busy. He's got other things to do. We'll re-engage when it's appropriate.
When was the last time you spoke to the president?
Who cares? I mean, it's a detail. It's a detail. I spoke to him. I'll speak to him again when it matters. I look forward to speaking to the president soon, but I don't have a burning issue to speak with the president about right now. When America wants to come back and have the discussions on the trade side, we will have those discussions.
You don't? you don't have a burning issue to talk with him about. And by the way, as far as who cares?
Mr. Speaker, we care. We care about the workers who've lost their jobs and don't have paychecks to make their mortgage payments. Why doesn't he care?
I mean, you had to know that was happening. I mean, that was my reaction when I heard it, too, is I'm thinking, well, I care. I know people do care. Bev and Elfross, maybe he should have just called an election to get Pierre in there. At least I think he cares. John in Saskatoon, I don't particularly like Mark Carney, but I also say screw it to Donald Trump. We're not supplicants, and we don't need to be begging and going on our hands and knees to him. That's exactly what he wants. Lee in Swift Current, in regards to Mr. Carney's comment of who cares, I don't care for him as a leader, and I did not choose him as leader of our country. However, is it possible that the comment is a tactic to not show our neighbors our cards? Is he playing it cool? Possibly. But I still think the comms people were scratching their heads and pulling their hair out when the who cares comment came out. Appreciate your thoughts on that. Appreciate the comments this morning during open lines. There's, lots going on these days to talk about. We're going to talk about youth unemployment. A great guest to talk about that next. And then we'll open phone lines again. I'm looking forward to hearing your experiences, your stories, your thoughts on what's driving youth unemployment in our country next here on 650 CKOM 980 CJME.